All right, everybody, it's time to attack some bees.
What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes!
From 1993, My Boyfriend's Back. Tagline, a comedy that proves true love never dies. Also, Johnny would give an arm and a leg to date Missy. Well, maybe just an arm. Directed by Bob Balaban and written by Dean Lorre. Principal players, we have Andrew Lowry playing Johnny Dingle, our zombie love boy.
Johnny Dingle.
Johnny Dingle. He was actually in the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie from 1992 and then a movie called Color of Night. We have Tracy Lind playing Missy McLeod, the hottest girl in town. She was in Class of 1999 and then Fright Night Part 2 from 1988. We have Danny Zorn playing Eddie, who is Johnny's best bud. Edward Herman playing Mr. Dingle, Johnny's dad. He's familiar to a lot of people for being the mom's boyfriend in The Lost Boys.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of got like that nerdy look to him, but I mean, he's been in several movies like that, and he was also in The Town That Dreaded Sundown remake in 2014. Mary Beth Hurt plays Mrs. Dingle, Johnny's very understanding mom, to the point that she actually brings a kid home and for him to have a snack so that he doesn't disintegrate.
You know, we got to keep our children alive. It is our duty as parents. They did not choose to be here, you know, so we have to do what we can to make sure.
I just
they
find
survive.
It funny between this and Life After Beth, the extreme situations that these parents went to keep their zombie kid alive. Well, you know, it's one of those things.
You notice the common denominator, right?
The mother in
the
most
mother.
Cases.
And yeah, the mother is the extreme. Now, granted, a dad loves his daughter like you wouldn't understand. But yeah, after Beth ate her dad, spoiler alert, you know, that mom, she could have ended it right then and there. She didn't.
No, she was just feeding her some finger food.
Oh, get out of here.
Mary Beth Hurt was also in the movie Daryl, which is a little known movie that only recently was made aware of. It's about this kid who's built by the government to be like this project for the military purposes, but he escapes and gets involved with his family. And they, throughout the course of the movie, the military is trying to find him, and he's just living like this normal little boy's life. And they have to, and it's basically almost like it's got an ET vibe to it. Like they're, you know, the military's always in the background after them, but they're just doing little kid things, you know?
Yeah.
It's of that type. It's not bad. She was also in Bringing Out the Dead and The Family Man with our man, Nick Cage.
Never heard of him.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh God, that's such a good movie. Can I get your opinion on something real quick on The Exorcism of Emily Rose? You think that shit was real?
I think that the people involved believed in it.
Okay.
Whether or not it's real, that's up for people who, you know, like the debate on like ghosts are real, whatever you believe.
Yeah. But
the people involved believed it. So,
Do you think that the time served for the priest was appropriate? Do you think he did something wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, they can sit there and make the argument all they want to that it was, you know, that they should have had like mental health, the police involved, whoever. But the priest, going by their standards and what they were, you know, the criteria, which is very extensive.
Oh yeah.
By the way, on proving whether or not something is a, you know, possession or not, I think they were well within their right to have went down that path.
Okay. Now,
should they have maybe involved other people? Maybe, but we saw, I mean, there's been other cases where other people involved in, you know, things got hairy as well. So it, I don't know.
It just reminds me of holistic health.
Oh yeah.
Kind of where if there's people that are getting, you know, away with that, I guess maybe they're not, well, they are and they aren't, but I just feel like, I don't know. I yeah.
Well, it also, I mean, where does modern day science versus like the practices of religion intercede? I mean, I know people make the argument either side, but I mean, if you want to take the Jehovah's Witnesses, for instance, they don't accept like blood transfusions, which everybody is well aware of is life saving, but not in the it's forbidden in religion. So
yeah. Anyways, moving forward.
We have she was in Red Dragon, another Hannibal Lecter movie.
Oh shit!
And then Lady in the Water, that weird what the twist M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie about basically this water fountain that holds like the same lady who held Excalibur out to King Arthur or whatever was going
on. Oh yeah! Oh god, I forgot. I thought there was a name of her. Anyways, go ahead.
We have J.O. Sanders playing Sheriff McCloud, Missy's disapproving father. We have Matthew Fox playing Buck Van Patten, who is Missy's ex and Johnny's rival in the movie. And Matthew Fox, predominantly known for being in the show Lost, was also in the movie Bone Tomahawk, which is extremely good, and World War Z, which we're going to be covering for the very next episode. So, well, after the Dawn of the Dead.
No,
so.
I know that, but I'm not ready. They just keep getting faster and faster.
The zombies are getting faster and faster, unfortunately. We have Philip Seymour Hoffman. Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
Playing Chuck Bronski, who wasn't using his brains anyway, so whenever he puts an axe into his own forehead, and then Johnny Dingle takes a little bite out of his stomach. Hey, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
The guy was dead already. It's just really funny seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman in this. First of all, this guy, I mean, I'm not done with the people in this, but I have to make this comment. Just about every high school student in this movie looks like they're well on their way to 40.
Oh,
I mean, if they're not in their late 30s. That's not necessarily a bad thing in Tracy Lynn's situation, because she is hot as hell, and it, you know, lusting after somebody who's that age is probably not a good thing. Definitely not a good thing. But seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman in this, looking like he's near 40 and playing, and he's got like a backwards ball cap to cover up the fact that he's nearly bald.
Yeah. He's got a really high hairline, and he has for a long time.
Yeah, it just looks weird. It's, but I mean, and he plays a goofy part too. Like, he's known for playing like these real smart characters in every movie that he plays in. But in this one, he's just a dumb jock, which is hilarious. Oh, but anyways, he was also in Red Dragon with, Mary Beth Hurt. We have Paul Dooley playing Big Chuck, who's Chuck's dad and the mob instigator. And he's a big time character actor. If you saw his face, you'd probably recognize him, but like, he's played in bit parts in a bunch of movies. Austin Pendleton plays Dr. Bronson, another big character actor. He has a terrible bedside manner in this movie, but he is a genius. He figures out how to use zombie flesh to make a rejuvenation potion that can de-age people. Does that sound familiar?
It reminds me, immediately I thought of the original commercial for, oh God, what video game? Raccoon City. Not Raccoon City, but
Resident Evil.
Resident Evil, the original commercial where it was like basically like an oil valet Regenerist commercial. Immediately thought of that. That's what came to my head.
I also think of Death Becomes Her.
There you go. Like, okay.
Self, you know, or de-aging type potion. we have Cloris Leachman, of all people, playing Maggie the zombie expert. She knows a thing or two because she's seen a thing or two,
I bet. Yeah.
I like how they set it up in the movie. They say that there was that when Murray, the gravedigger, which is the next person I'm going to talk about here in a second, sees Johnny come out of the grave, he's like, well, I haven't seen this happen in 15 years. And they set up this whole backstory that somebody else came back as a zombie in this town, and it just so happens it was Cloris Leachman's husband.
Oh.
And so that's why she knows that zombies have to eat flesh to keep them from decaying. So that's why she has that knowledge, basically. And then Bob Dishy plays Murray the Gravedigger. He's just a graveyard caretaker. caretaker that is trying to help living and the dead, which is a little bit like Cemetery Man.
Yeah.
Synopsis. Johnny Dingle has loved Missy McLeod since they were kids. Now that the big high school prom is coming up and Missy finally broke up with her hunky boyfriend, Johnny figures he has a chance to get the girl of his dreams. Unfortunately, a bad plan to save Missy during a staged grocery store robbery ends up costing Johnny his life, which would have been the end of the story, but Johnny's love or some higher power brings the love-struck high schooler back for one last chance at love. Only hitch is, Johnny is decaying, and if he doesn't eat some live flesh, there won't be any of him left to take Missy to the prom. Missy is hot, Johnny's dingle is about to rot, and the town mob is determined someone is going to get shot. This movie's interesting. It's got comic interludes and it begins and ends with like a comic book. It kind of reminds you of like the old EC Tales from the Crypt comics.
Oh yeah.
It's played for comedy. Throughout the entire movie, there are certain scenes where they really like lean into the zombie thing where, Johnny has, after he's had like the date, with Missy, who for some weird reason is more attracted to him because he's a zombie with no apparent reason why. It wasn't just the fact that he, sacrificed himself to save her. I mean, that's the only reason she gave him a little bit of a chance because of that, but something about him being a zombie makes him different than the other guys in town. So she's really hot over that. It's weird.
Gross.
That's all I can say. But she's like, you know, basically licking his ear and, you know, like that sort of thing. And then whenever she does a little love bite on his lower earlobe, his whole ear comes off. And then after that, he has a dream later that night that his dingle falls out while he's trying to get it on with her. And so that forces him to go to the local doctor to try to figure out how to reverse the zombieism, which the doctor has no clue, but the doctor does help him by putting super glue in his ear. So there you go. He does help him that way.
You know, modern science.
But no, it's almost like a throwback to the 50s stuff too. Yeah. I mean, cause everybody in this is that, you know, I mean, like even though Johnny is like dressed kind of like 90s grunge, like, you know, the basketball the jocks are all like the Letterman jackets and, you know, it's, and everybody in town, they kind of play on the, racism angle a little bit without even being that way, because everybody in town's like, an upstanding girl like her shouldn't date a guy like him, you know? And it's like, well, what's wrong with a guy like him? And it's like, cause he's a zombie, which is, could be a stand in for, you know, other things.
Yeah. But. Oh, that's definitely going on. And like I told you in the book that I'm reading, I feel like we've mentioned it before that there's definitely an underlying message in a lot of zombie films.
There usually is. I mean, and it's going to be throughout the you know, this season, but for sure this one, there's that vibe that's going on that's, even though he's white and that makes it a little bit more laughable, that it's almost playing up the fact that he's an other to the community, which, you know, kind of playing up the, like almost an interracial relationship or something. I don't know. It's a very, I mean, it kind of goes into my rating, but like I put it as like Trapped in Paradise, the Nick Cage movie. It's an inoffensive comedy, but it doesn't really stick with you. It's kind of like, I mean, extremely light popcorn movie. I mean, it's decent when you're watching it, but it's just like, it's not one that you'll be like, man, I really want to watch this movie. No, if it's on TV, you'll watch that, which is how I saw it back in the day. I think it was on HBO constantly at one point.
Yeah,
but
we talked about this. This was the movie I mistook for the other B movie you were talking about, and I would just watch it on repeat, I feel like.
Yeah, because it would be, I mean, they could show it at any time of the day, so they would just keep playing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Because it's just a light comedy. I mean, there's not much to it, but it is neat for the fact that they have a scene in the middle of it where Missy and Johnny go to the movies, and it's a zombie movie that's playing, and it's a neat little scene that they have where the guy in the movie who's some kind of like doctor scientist type is saying something to the effect of, there could be a zombie right beside of you, and he points towards the screen and like right at Johnny and the audience or whatever. So it plays up the whole zombie movie thing, you know, thing a little bit,
which is not something we get frequently in a zombie film.
No, and I mean, they even call themselves zombies, or he calls himself a zombie, and everybody else does in this quite a bit, so they reference it a lot, which normally in these movies, they go out of their way to not say the Z word, as they would say in Shaun of the Dead. but anyways, do you remember anything about this that you sticks out for you? I mean, it's just kind of like here and there. I mean, as far as it goes,
I literally have not watched this since I was a kid. You know, my parents, they were upstanding citizens and we stole our cable. And, and so the fact that I even had HBO, I was at home by myself. I'm surprised I didn't watch other stuff. Girls are not curious like little boys. But yeah, this was just would be something that was just on repeat nonstop. You know what I think? I think I take that back. I think my dad was at home. He worked night shift, so as long as I didn't wake him up, I could do whatever during the day. And apparently this is what I did for at least a month until they found a new movie to play on repeat. So
yeah, I don't know why this struck a chord with me, because I don't know that I was necessarily into horror films at that time in my life, but if it came around the time that I, you know, after I got scarred by Return of the Living Dead, then this was like a nice way to have, what do they call that? Like that therapy where you expose yourself to something, you know, and it was that for me. It's like, he's a zombie, but he's a funny zombie. I can deal with this, which technically they're kind of funny in Return of the Living Dead, but
yeah,
it doesn't play that way to a kid. Not at all.
I mean, so I was terrified of zombies already at this point. I know that much. I know I didn't see Return of the Living Dead because I don't have too much memories of Return of the Living Dead. I know. So, which is good. Good for the podcast. But for my childhood, I think when I was little, what I can tell you about what I know is that I think I just kind of viewed him as a monster, not so much a zombie. And I don't know, it wasn't scary to me at all, which it's not supposed to be, obviously. This film's not a scary movie by any means. But even the dumbest zombie movies I have been terrified of, and I don't think My Boyfriend's Back was one of them.
No, it's just an inoffensive comedy. There's nothing.
It's too bubblegum.
Yeah, I don't even know if somebody who's against horror movies would have a problem with this. Like, you know, say Daphne. Yeah.
Daphne.
She'd be fine watching this. She'd probably get a kick out of seeing that scene where Johnny's dingle rolls out of his pant leg or whatever. Oh, I mean, in the dream sequence.
Good Lord. I wonder if we could get her to watch. Like, do we know if she's seen Scary Movie?
I haven't heard her say. And surely to God, that one would be like easy to pick up. I mean, because it's just straight comedy.
It's digestible, you know?
Like human flesh.
Yes, much like human flesh.
All right. Well, that wraps that one up, and we'll see you on the other side with Life After Bed. Welcome back to Death Holler. I am your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, Law Urena. This episode, we are discussing Life After Beth from 2014. Tagline, some girls just want to watch the world burn. I don't know how that relates to the movie, honestly. I really don't.
I mean, she, not to jump ahead, but she did literally catch a whole ass fucking beach hut on fire.
Yeah, but it wasn't like she wanted to watch it burn. She was like having a freak out moment because her brain's rotting away. So
yeah, that is true. But she had an anger inside of her for sure. She had a fire burning from multiple things in her.
Yeah. Directed by Jeff Baena, written by Jeff Baena, music by Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. A lot of smooth jazz for all you smooth jazz enthusiasts out there. Made for a budget of $2.4 million, only has a box office of $274,717 U.S. dollars. Sounds like the Cemetery Man situation all over again.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Principal players, we've got Dwayne DeHaan playing Zach Orfman, our protagonist who just can't let go. He's been in several, actually, big movies. The Place Beyond the Pines, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Chronicle, which is, I would label Chronicle as a horror movie. Have you ever saw that movie before?
Chronicle? No, but it looked familiar, but I don't know what it is.
It was a superhero movie before Marvel and all them got big, and basically it asked the question, if you had superpowers, would you know, and especially if you were a picked on high school student when you got your powers, would you actually be a hero? And the answer is no.
Oh, no, would you not would not. Be. Okay.
I mean, it's one of those, oh, I can't remember the name of it. What, just like the, it's the same found footage is what I'm thinking
oh,
of.
Okay. So,
I mean, it follows the kids around as they're, it kind of cheats narratively that way, but it kind of follows them around as they're filming each other with like little handheld cameras. But the fact that they can fly allows the camera, and that they can telekinetically move the camera means that they can put the camera in places that you wouldn't normally see in these type of movies.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's pretty dark, so I mean, I would label it more of a horror movie than anything else, but he's also in Oppenheimer, which just came out.
Yeah, impressive.
He's going to be in Lizzie's Story, or was, the Stephen King TV series.
Okay.
And he was in A Cure for Wellness, which is a pretty freaky movie. So, I mean, he's got some horror bona fides going on for newer movies.
Yeah, he's also got, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but did he not look like he could also be a zombie in this film? He's got those Helen-colored eyes, you know?
He was the same situation that we talked about with Death Becomes Her, where, you know, Ernest looked dead through most of the movie.
Yes.
This dude looked dead. Everybody else in the movie had some color to him except him.
Yeah.
Even at one point, Aubrey Plaza looked like she had more color than him.
Beth definitely had a little more to her skin color than he did.
Speaking of Beth, we have Aubrey Plaza playing Beth Slocum, our
Never
dearly departed love interest. Yeah, she's not been in anything. Parks and Rec, pretty much where everybody saw her, probably before she broke big and everything else. She was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, the new, you know, animated cartoon series that's on Netflix. Safety Not Guaranteed. That's actually a very interesting movie. I don't know that you would like it, but it's a time travel movie that's like done on a micro budget, but it's really well done. Like throughout most of the movie, the guy seems like he's insane, but I mean, as you watch the movie, he might not be. So, I mean, yeah. He says he can time travel. She was in White Lotus. She had a really good part in that. I mean, on HBO, Dirty Grandpa. She's whoring it up in that movie pretty well. Same as in the to-do list. I mean, it's literally, she's a straight-A student over the course of a summer before she goes to college. She's trying to bang as many guys as possible. Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates that she did with Kendra, whatever her name is. It's in the Pitch Perfect movies or whatever. I've got her on the list here at the bottom, but okay. Anna Kendrick.
Oh, okay.
She's done several movies with Anna Kendrick, so that's not a surprise. She was in The Little Hours, which several of these people in this movie were in The Little Hours. And I bring that up because she plays a devil-worshipping nun in that movie.
Okay. Makes sense.
Ingrid Goes West, which is actually a really good human horror, like, indie movie, where she goes to California to start a new life because of she's a very disturbed individual, and when she gets out there, she gloms on to, like, this girl who's, like, a celebrity, like an internet celebrity, and basically, I mean, it's almost like she's a stalker at that point, and just things get worse throughout the movie. And then she was in Child's Play, the remake. I don't like it necessarily. It's not bad, but it's not, I mean, it's Mark Hamill instead of, you know, Brad Dourif, so you're going to lose on that one. And then she was in Legion, which was actually the first season, at least, is a very horror themed superhero, like X-Men spinoff or whatever. This guy's superpowers is basically that he has a demonic being inside of his body, and it can do like all these different powers, and it's slowly taking control of him, I think.
Oh my God.
And he keeps seeing Lenny, which is Aubrey Plaza's character, and she was a mental patient that he was with in the hospital before he left. And there's a hint that she might be dead, and he might, or but like she's still manifesting somehow. John C. Reilly's in this as Maury Slocum, or Maury Slocum, Bess, well-meaning but overprotective father. I don't know who John C. Reilly is. You'll have to explain to me who that guy is.
Well, I haven't really heard of him. So, you know, I think he was in Chicago, but I can't tell you any other popular movie he's been in.
I just heard he likes to wreck it. That's what I heard. So.
Oh, my God. I wonder if my son would recognize him just by that alone. I do recall he played, I think, world-renowned, oh, God, I don't know, it was a friend of Ricky Bobby.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Shake and Bake Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, he was in Talladega Nights, Ballad of Ricky Bobby. He was in Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, which is basically a play on the Johnny Cash biopic. Step Brothers. He was also in The Little Hours. He plays like a head monk in that one. And he was in, and a lot of people probably, if they don't know him by anything else, have seen him as Steve Brule in internet memes, because he's that guy, like the really goofy looking dude with the hair poofed out to the side and the Coke bottle glasses that's just making stupid faces.
If nothing else. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen him on the internet, if nothing else from that.
So two things. He was Cal Naughton Jr. in Talladega Nights, which
yes,
love it. I love that movie.
I love that scene in that movie, by the way, when he's like, after he's taken everything from Ricky Bobby and they're on like a Skype chat or whatever they're doing. And he's like, I think your house is haunted. And he's like, I don't give a damn, Cal. He's like, you've took everything from me.
And, he's
and
the
he
one...
keeps going on about how the house, there's a ghost around that and it's going to get him or whatever.
And how he's suffering because he misses his friend. And like, you're going to come to the wedding? We're going to have a nacho fountain.
He's I don't like you. Stop.
I wanted a nacho fountain at my wedding so bad. I didn't do it, but I think it would have been, considering how classy my wedding actually was, I think we could have gotten away with a nacho fountain as the thing to kind of, you know, bring it down
slum
a notch.
It up.
Yeah, we could have absolutely, and we're Mexican, so it would have made sense, you know?
Nobody would have thought anything different.
I don't think they would have. Oh, but the second thing was, I have not seen Step Brothers.
Oh my God.
I know the songs from Step Brothers.
Boats and hoes.
I know quotes.
I mean,
I know so many things. But I have not seen the movie at all.
Did we just become best friends? Yep.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just kidding.
That one's a weird one because I love that movie, but I hate it at the same time because they are so annoying at parts in that movie, but they're supposed to be, you know.
Yeah. Are they okay, so question from a person who hasn't seen it but has to wonder, are they just delayed a little bit because they're adult children?
Never forced to grow up.
Okay.
Like their parents babied them, but then their parents hated them because they babied them, and now it's too late. Now they're having to deal with the consequences, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
We have Molly Shannon playing Jeannie Slocum,
best
oblivious mother. Yeah, she's not been in anything. I do hear she's a superstar, though.
No. Superstar.
Smell your armpits after you say that.
No, I absolutely will not. Well, her and Will Ferrell, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny. I mean, all these people know each other because, I mean, as many times as John C. Reilly has worked with Will Ferrell and as much as Molly Shannon's worked with him, they're all in the same group, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they know each other. She was obviously on Saturday Night Live in addition to being the superstar sketch. She also did the cheerleading thing all the time with that might have been Sherry O'Terry that did that more often with Will Ferrell, but she was in a lot of Will Ferrell's, like, sketches on that. She was also in White Lotus for two episodes with Aubrey Plaza. She was in The Little Hours, again, with Aubrey Plaza and John C. Reilly. She was in Children's Hospital for an episode with Rob Corddry that we covered
Children's
just an episode
Hospital
or two ago.
Children's Hospital is so weird.
It really is. She is in all of the Wet Hot American Summer, the movie and the Netflix stuff. Like, she's in all of it. So,
yeah.
She was in Hotel Transylvania and all the sequels for that as a voice actress. She was also in Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. She was in How the Grinch Stole Christmas. She plays the mother of Cindy Lou Who in that one.
Oh, yeah.
And she was in Twin Peaks for an episode, which surprised me, but that was way back in the day.
Wait, this was Cheryl Hines? Because I thought it was her. Like, okay, I know you just said it was Cheryl Hines. Sorry. But, like, I didn't think it was really her. She looks different in this movie.
Who, Molly Shannon?
No, Cheryl Hines. Okay, oh, wait, you're still on Molly Shannon.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
And I was just going to say she was also in Robert Englund's Phantom of the Opera, which is kind of interesting that she was in that.
Robert Englund had a Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah, it was like in the 80s. And they marketed it. If you look at the DVD cover, they were clearly trying to bank on the fact that he was Freddy Krueger. I mean, it looks, even the way he's holding the mask and everything, it looks similar to it.
Yes.
Cheryl Hines is Judy Orfman in this, Zach's concerned mother, from Curb Your Enthusiasm, A Bad Mom's Christmas, tons of TV. She's one of those, I'm surprised that you couldn't recognize her because I thought that I'd seen more of the stuff that she'd been in because when she showed up, I was like, I know her from somewhere.
Okay.
And I didn't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, boo on me, because I've heard it's great. But, and I have seen Bad Mom's Christmas, but I thought it was something else completely that I saw her in.
Okay, hold on. I just want to see. Because I did recognize her. It's not that I didn't. It's just that I thought she looked so different. Maybe I'm thinking, no, she looked, to me, she just looked different in this film.
I'll be honest. I thought she was from Modern Family whenever I saw her.
Oh, yeah.
She looks like that she actress could've. That plays the main, you know, kind of character on. I know it's an ensemble, but I feel like that guy and then her are like the two mains and everybody else kind of branches out from them.
Yeah.
We have Paul Reiser playing Noah Orfman in this, Zach's unbelieving father. I was surprised at seeing him in this, honestly. I mean, Paul Reiser, to me, growing up in the 80s, was big time. I don't know why, but, like, he was in, like, I mean, when you saw him and stuff, it was like, I mean, because he was just, like, a famous person. Like, I mean, he was in Mad About You, which, I mean, was a big sitcom. My Two Dads, which I saw a ton of after school, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
And early 90s. Crazy People, he was in that. Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2. He was in the more recent Whiplash movie. He was also in The Little Hours, so there's kind of a theme here. A lot of these people all worked on that movie together. He was in Aliens. He was a slimy corporate goon in that one. He was in The Darkness, and he was also in Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Who was he in Stranger Things? What do I recognize him from that?
He was one of the people that worked in he was the good one that worked for the government, you know, in that lab corporation, the one that helped Elle. Like he was the one that actually helped her out.
Okay.
We have Matthew Gray Gubler playing Kyle Orfman, Zach's cop brother, and most people recognize him from Criminal Minds. I mean, that is pretty much directly where most people would remember him from.
Yeah.
He was also in Batman Assault on Arkham, the Alvin and Chipmunk movies, the CGI ones. He was Simon, the voice of Simon in those. And I covered this a little bit in Attack of the Bees earlier on, but he was in a movie called Suburban Gothic, which is not that great, honestly. And another horror movie, indie horror movie called Excision, which I don't know what that's about, but it sounds kind of interesting.
Okay.
We have Anna Kendrick playing Erica Wexler, Zach's longtime friend, and maybe somebody who might be more than friends, the way that it looks like partway through the movie and toward the end.
Hopefully, because he needs, after dealing
he needs
with
somebody to move on.
Yeah, because I am convinced she's definitely not Latina, but she was playing a Latina, Audrey Plaza. He needs a good, calm white girl in his life after that.
And it seems like Anna Kendrick's just what he needs.
Oh,
very easygoing. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, the opposite in all ways of Aubrey Plaza. Pitch Perfect trilogy. She's pretty great in those movies. The Scott Pilgrim versus the World again with Aubrey. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, Trolls movie. She plays the voice of Poppy in that. Mike and Dave Wouldn't Even Wedding Dates with Aubrey Plaza. Rapture Palooza. That's the movie when I thought of Anna and the Apocalypse that I kept thinking of, because Anna Kendrick is in the Apocalypse, and the guy who plays Daryl in The Office is the devil, and like he and she's going to become his bride or something in the movie, and that's the and it's kind of a horror, you know, themed black comedy, as it were.
Yeah.
And she was also in the Twilight Saga. Never saw them. Mm-mm. Don't plan on ever watching them, but she was in those. And I threw this on there just because it was an interesting movie, because my wife really liked her in Pitch Perfect. So we ended up watching this one called A Simple Favor, which is kind of a different take for Anna Kendrick, because she plays like a very dark character in that. She's just like I mentioned with Aubrey Plaza's character in Ingrid Goes West. It's one of those situations where she sees somebody and she wants their life. So, you know, wow. She starts obsessing and goes that direction, you know.
Weird.
And then Eva Ladair plays Perlene, the Slocum's Haitian house cleaner. And she's done lots of TV with voice actor work, including Jedi Fallen Order and Resident Evil 5. I'm assuming more for the Haitian accent she's got that kind of fits in with some of those things. What did you think about that, by the way, the little Haitian throw-in? You know,
I fucking loved it.
Because he's like, if anybody's going to know about a zombie, it's her. So,
and yes.
And then when they goes to the guy later, the guy's like, do you think that every Haitian knows about zombies? Like, fuck you, basically, is what it amounted to.
Yeah.
He's like, that's kind of racist, dude. Stop.
Oh, my God.
All right. Synopsis for this movie. Zach is completely detached after losing his girlfriend, Beth, and capable of moving on due to things that were left unsaid. He tries to keep her memory alive by visiting her parents. Soon after befriending Beth's father, the Slocums mysteriously ghost Zach and refuse to answer his phone calls. While investigating, aka stalking their home, he sees that Beth is in fact alive and well. She has been resurrected. And the Slocums want to make sure that no one else knows about their little secret. Unfortunately, there's something wrong with Beth, and her hunger and confusion grows by the day. Beth is breaking down. The dead are coming back all over town, and smooth jazz is the only thing that keeps the zombies at peace.
I fucking love it.
Quotes, Zach speaking to Erica, "You have, like, really great skin." "Really?" "Yeah, it's, like, it's really great." "Oh, my God, thank you. Can I touch it?" "Yeah, okay. You're so interesting." And then Zach touches her cheek. "Wow, it's, like, flawless." And she's like, "Oh, my God, thank you." And this is the part I included it for. Zach responds back, "And I can breathe through my nose around you."
I didn't catch that part. I only caught the other time you told Beth about her being stank.
Yeah, whenever he says that, I'm like, okay. He's been kissing on this thing that he can barely stomach the smell of. That's,
Not only that, he's been fucking her.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was when she was fresh. Well, yeah. Fresher, I guess. Grandpa, I was in World War II. I know addicts. That's a long callback.
Oh, my God.
Anne Frank, anybody? I'm just saying, because they are a Jewish family. I
didn't even think about that.
Zach speaking to along with Beth. You don't want to eat me, do you? And she's like, Zach, not right now. Remember? And he's like, no, I really mean eat me. And she's like, stop. Not when my parents are around. Come on. She never denies that she's going to eat him.
That is true. That is, she I didn't even think about that. And then later on that night, he's on the phone with her, and he's like, I love you too. I love you too. No, I want to eat your face off.
Yeah, that's what he says to her later on the night on the phone. and then Beth later on, like she's arguing. She's just busted through a window in this scene. Some random guy that's wandering through the neighborhood because zombies are all over the place, and he's trying to find some place to run to. She breaks out, and then she's like eat on him. Like you see the blood spurt on the rest of the glass. She comes back in and she says, I'm a zombie. Zombies eat guys. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like M&M's. I am whatever you say I am. And they keep he keeps calling her a zombie. So.
Well, and then there's that scene. I mean, that ties into that where she keeps going, I'm dead. I'm alive. I'm dead. I'm alive. He was the one that told her that she was dead and fucked her mind up even more so than it was already at. This is Beth speaking to Zach. How could I be dead, Zach? I'm not dead. My mom and dad would have told me if I was dead. And Zach's like, they didn't want to hurt your feelings. No, no. How could I be dead if I'm alive? You can't be both things, Zach. You can't be alive or dead or alive. And I'm alive. And he's like, okay. She's like, look at me, Zach. Feel me. Look. And he's like, your parents think you were resurrected like Jesus. And then he's like, or a zombie. And she's like, or a zombie. What the fuck, Zach? What does that mean? I like how they keep saying that. They're all Jewish, but they're like, yeah, it's like Jesus. And it's like, do you even believe in that?
Yeah. I mean,
and then, of course, the scene I was talking about where she's going down the hallway. I'm dead. I'm alive. I'm dead. I'm alive. I'm dead. I'm alive. Like, she's really broke down at this point, like, if she's walking through there. I like this scene at the end where Eric is crouched against the wall, like, and Zach has learned that his family's not dead and burnt in the backyard or near the pool like he thought they were. And then she's there. She's just kind of, like, broke down like Barbara is in the first Night of the Living Dead. And she's like, I stuck a tent pole through my Nana's head. And then Kyle, at the end of it, his brother, finally, after he's shot a bunch of zombies and, like, he's kind of trying to, he tells Zach about how he's, like, it really bothered him to shoot his grandpa in the head and put him down. He turns around and says this, all I ever wanted to do was shoot people. Well, you got your wish, son. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, like, I can't tell if that's a good thing, you know, like, it kind of got it out of his system, because will he have turned into a psychopath if he didn't get the chance to shoot these people in the head?
I mean, he was a cop that didn't anything but sit in his parents' house and clean his gun all night, so he probably have killed someone.
Oh, he wasn't even a cop. He was neighborhood security.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. He was neighborhood security. He acted like he was a cop. That's yes. What it was.
And then because his brother was like, well, what are you going to do? He's like, I can force you to go to your car. He's like, and then I could call the police. I was like, oh, so you're not the real police. Okay, I get it.
And then whenever he's falling behind Zach, like shortly behind him and forcing him to drive back to their house or whatever, away from this. All right, getting in the movie. They surprisingly did a good job on the makeup for Aubrey Plaza.
Well, yeah, because she didn't really have to look like a zombie at the beginning. So, you know, It was just her. But, like, the purple around her eyes got more dramatic as it went on, and the paleness.
Well, the burn
rash
thing that she had on her face, that looked really bad. And then for the rest of the movie, when she covered up with makeup, you could still see how it, like, the flesh had kind of, like, tore away there a little bit. The snake bite that was near her crotch or whatever that actually killed her, like, it looked pretty bad even whenever she first came back.
That was nasty.
And then, like, the zombies themselves, like the thing that, I mean, this goes into the story, but the thing I like about this movie is they slow play stuff. There's little things at first. Like, when he's sitting there the very first night that he comes home from learning that Beth is alive, or actually it's when he comes back from Mari's house the same night that Beth comes back, he's getting ready to go into his parents' house, and there's this one guy running down the street in the middle of the night. It's like 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy's running for no reason, at least on that you could see.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's a sign that there's – and then later, like, his mailman comes up to him in the middle of the day, and he's like, I haven't seen you in years. He's like – and he just shoves a bunch of mail at him. He's like, have a good day. And when he tries to drive away, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, it's, he's like, just okay, hitting a bunch of shit, running over lawns.
Yeah, it's like, okay, Beth's not the only special person that came back that night. It was, you know.
Now, the person that was running, though, was that a zombie or was that a person running from a zombie?
It looked like a person running from a zombie.
That's what I was thinking, yeah, because I was like, well, I didn't see somebody chasing him at that point anyways, and they didn't say anything. Like, I personally would be screaming my head off, but who knows, you know?
And there's several scenes where when he's in the car with Beth and right before they turn it over to smooth jazz, there's the radio that's trying to say that there's chaos going on downtown.
Downtown is in mass chaos, and then he changes the channel.
Which always happens in zombie movies. Yes. Like, they never listen to the news, ever.
Nope, and kids don't listen to the news nowadays anyways. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that they were they weren't our age. We were definitely older, so they're younger than us, so they're definitely millennials.
But they didn't have to do a lot of visual stuff in this movie just because they only had really the main character. I mean, now later in the movie, you see more and more zombies, and they do have something creepy about them each time. Like, their face doesn't look quite right. And especially when Grandpa and like those two people that own the house that the orphans live in, like, they've been clearly dead for a long time. Like, I mean, they, you know, but they do a decent job with their makeup too whenever they come back.
They just looked. They looked old and dusty and crusty. Ugh.
Yeah, and then the dead bodies that were burned in the back or near the pool, like I said, they looked pretty legit. Yeah. I mean, that's not a hard thing to pull off. There's a lot of people does that for Halloween now. You take, you know, like plastic and kind of melt it on a skeleton or whatever. But still, it served its purpose in that scene.
Yeah.
The things I think they did the best in this movie, though, were the little things like that scene that you mentioned in Cemetery Man, where he's in the attic with her, and then she says, hold on just a second, and she disappears into the shadows, and it's just her eyes, and it is so creepy in that scene, the way that she's looking at him, and it's like, you're going to get eaten. I mean, she's straight up, she's feral, like she's, I mean, and I think I told you this maybe off screen or whatever, off the podcast, but there's something feral about Aubrey Plaza, just like the way the looks that she gives anyways, like even on just like David Letterman and some of those pod, you know, like the late night shows, and they use that to their best ability in this movie. Like, just the look in her eye, it's like, I'm going to eat something, like it's going to happen here soon. You know?
Yeah. And I think they did such a good job because it wasn't one of those, it wasn't like crazy obvious. It was just a tiny glow of the eyes. Enough to know that it wasn't natural, like light of eye shine, but it wasn't like so freaking like blatant obvious, like super glowy, you know?
Yeah, they didn't like do, like going back to maybe we've already covered this season, they didn't do the murder Legendre thing where like his eyes were like clearly like had, you know, like candles or something like held up next to him or whatever, you know, flashlight, that sort of thing. It was just a little bit of glint in the, you know, almost like cat's eyes or something as they're like, you know,
she's ascending, she's backing up
but that's one thing I like about the movie is they do just enough with the makeup to sell it. Like, they don't go like overboard with anything. And it's the type of movie where it's like played for comedy, but there's some creepy moments in this. Like when he wakes up later, after he's been like knocked out, I want to say by Mari, and like, and Beth's been driven back to her house, and we find out that she's actually eaten Mari at that point. Speaking of that, cause I'm on that tangent, Molly Shannon cutting her fingers off and feeding them to Beth. That was creepy.
I thought that Beth had already like just bitten her hand.
No, she had, it went back and it showed that she had one of those wooden chopping blocks was blood all over it. She'd been cutting her own fingers off and individually feeding them to Beth.
I mean, yeah. Cause like, I was thinking, I was like, okay, well, if my daughter had already bit me, I'm already done for. So might as well just fucking eat my arm. Like, I can allow anyone to eat me, whoever I please, you know,
just like in Cemetery Man.
Yeah, but I'm torn on whether or not I could kill one of my kids if they were a zombie. Like, I could easily tell someone to put me out to the pasture. I'll look at the flowers if you want me to put me out of my misery, but I don't know that I could do that to my kids.
Well, it's funny because this movie and the Attack of the Bees, whenever we do that segment for My Boyfriend's Back, do the exact same thing where the zombie's parents like go out of their way to feed the zombie. Like, and My Boyfriend's Back, they actually kidnap a kid.
Ooh, damn.
And have him like sitting there like a little kid. And it's like, Here's your lunch, Johnny. And Johnny's like, I'm not eating this, kid. What are you doing, Mom?
Oh,
and
my she's God. Like,
you've got to eat. You know, it's
yeah, it's, I don't think I'd be bringing kids. Like, do you still like animals? Because here's a pig, you know?
Well, it's the flesh of the living that keeps him from dying, not, you know.
No.
But getting back to my point, when Mari knocks him out and he wakes up the next morning, there is a zombie like homeless man standing over top of just swaying.
Yes.
And it's really creepy.
That's creepy as fuck. Noah was on edge. He was like, oh my God, man. Oh my God. And I was like, chill out, dude. They don't really do anything. Like, it's weird. I mean, I know they're getting to that point, possibly. Well, I don't know. I feel like she's the only one that gets violent. There's other zombies that are losing their shit, but you don't actually see them eat anybody.
They didn't get to that point yet. The one cook that was the fry cook that was in the restaurant that was a zombie, he started shoving the stuff like very violently. So he was getting there.
We saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's the only one we follow enough to see that, but they're all getting to that point.
Question: was the waiter in that restaurant a zombie or turning into one?
I think he was a zombie because he was like, man, you don't like smooth jazz. Like the way he said it was like he was really into. And then he slams the table as they the check on it.
Yeah.
And that's whenever they're like, oh, God, I guess we better go.
And then he gave her a ton of money.
Yeah. He was getting violent, too, in that scene.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's what every waiter and serving staff wish they could do the customer, so.
So I was with Noah in that scene with with him just being laying on the ground and that homeless man, because they're getting to that point, at this junction in the movie. And I'm just like, he might not get out of this for a split second. I'm like, he might get attacked. But he actually, the homeless man just kind of did the fentanyl zombie, wobble. And that was about the extent of it,
which is so funny because normally I feel like I would be the one to panic in that situation. And I'm over here telling Noah to chill the fuck out. And you and him were like,
well, and the other creepy thing was whenever he was at Beth's house or I think near the end of the movie, and there was the two like hippie zombies that were in the neighbor's like shrubbery or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
They looked like at any moment in time they might get up and come after him. Like,
I
just kept waiting.
That too. I was like, are those zombies or are those people? I guess I didn't get a chance to get a good look, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And that's one thing I love about this movie, even though it's played as a comedy slash like drama piece about somebody moving on after the death of a loved one. It's got some real creep going on in it. Like, they really do a good job with the atmosphere of it to make it a horror movie.
Yeah.
And that kind of gets in the story. I mean, a little bit. What did you? How did it hit you at the end of the movie? Because I gotta ask this. That goes into the acting a little bit. That scene between Zombie Beth and Zach, whenever they're standing on the hillside, out on their hike, as it were, she's hilariously got the stove still chained to her. But he says, I love you. And then she says it back to him the best she can in a zombie voice. And then he has to put her out of her misery. Like, what did that like do anything for you as far as like, cause it kind of got me a little bit. I wasn't, like emotional about it or anything, but the way that she said it, the way Aubrey Plaza was like, I love you too. And he had I think she did a good job in that part.
I was at the point where I was like, she needs to be put down because, again, she's a zombie. So I've lost all love and respect for her.
Sympathy.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, it's time to let her go. So I was more happy that he was finally at the point where he could let her go. I didn't really feel anything. I mean, I know you're supposed to. I was dead inside at this point. I was like, it's time for her to fucking go. And the way she fell was fucking hilarious.
That's what I was getting ready to say. They follow that moment up immediately with her tumbling end over end with that thing crushing her as she falls. And it's hilarious. I'm like, okay, I give you a slow clap for that one.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
It was hilarious. Now, did you see, was that her leg that was still stuck on the hill on the first area where she crashed?
I didn't even look.
I thought I saw
a leg. I was too busy seeing, like, they did a good job because the dummy didn't look bad. That was falling.
Oh, yeah, not at all. They did really, really good. It was hilarious. I think what was more funny, though, is prior to all this, when she's got to go on the walk and the brother's trying to shoot her because, clearly she's a zombie, and she falls backwards and she's fucking legs in the air, panties fucking on display. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? This poor girl, she just keeps having to show off her ass,
She's done way more than that in movies.
Well, obviously,
so that wasn't a big
thing.
She
showed
her,
off more at fucking award shows than the dresses she wears.
I would say watch Dirty Grandpa. She does a lot of simulated sucking in that movie, is all I'm going to say.
Good Lord.
and for an older guy too, which is creepy, but whatever. We'll leave that to the side. But yeah, that's the funny thing about this movie. They'll have like a really like drama type moment, and then they'll have something that's really goofy the next to kind of offset it. But then they work in the horror element too. It's kind of nuts. The music we kind of discussed like off air before this, the smooth jazz is the only thing that stays in my mind throughout the entire movie.
It's good, smooth Kenny jazz.
Kenny G knockoff. Yes. Central.
Oh my God. And I do like smooth jazz.
Are you a zombie? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I guess so. But here's the thing, like, okay, so Noah and I were discussing, and I don't know if you have heard of her, but we're laughing because we thought she was only in our area, and she has been broadcasting all over the United States since the late 80s, maybe early 90s. And her name's Delilah. Do you know of this radio DJ?
I have not heard of this woman, okay. No.
She's always on smooth jazz radio stations or like not soft rock, classic rock stations. And she's usually on at night, and she's got this amazing voice. Like she's got a voice I aspire to. It was the most calming, relaxing. And she's like, hello, what's your name? Oh, this is Delilah. How can I help you? And the listener would be like, hi, Delilah. I want you to play a song for my husband. He's been out, you know, at this job site for X amount of time, and I've been thinking about him. And she just picks the best song that she thinks will go. And it could either be smooth jazz or classic rock or soft rock, you know? Yeah. And it's hella good. And she's got an amazing voice. She's on Spotify. You can find her everywhere. She's still fucking famous. So I was talking to Noah about this, I think right before we watched this movie. And then, of course, smooth jazz comes on. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
It's you saying that, the first thing that came to mind is like, does she speak with an NPR voice? It's
yes.
Like, this is Late Night with Delilah.
Yes.
And,
she does. But she's so much better than NPR. Like, she's got character to her voice, just a gorgeous voice. NPR is, I guess, very calming. Not calming, but I don't know, kind of smooth and straight to the point. But Delilah is a fucking, she was meant for the radio for sure.
As long as she doesn't have a face for radio, she that's doesn't. The main thing.
No, she's actually pretty too. So
okay, cool. Some of those DJs on the Sirius XM or whatever that used to do some of those, like, I mean, the female ones at least, they sounded like they might be, you know, and then you'd actually see pictures and like, well, they're fairly attractive. I mean, most of the time you think of like these radio DJs as being like butt ugly. That's the reason they're on, you know, the radio.
They got a face for the radio.
But they have great voices, you know. But yeah, I'll be honest, like, this movie, like, the reason I wanted you to watch it is it knocked me out, like, the first time I saw it, how much I liked it. I was like, they did a damn good job with, like, I mean, not having a whole lot going on in the movie. I mean, or as far as, like, because I never heard of it. Like, I just happened upon it. Like, it's an A24 movie. They don't really go out of their way to advertise. It's just like, well, we know we're quality, so you either watch your shit or you don't. And it was people I liked in it. So I was like, I'll give it a chance. And I was like, they did a pretty good job building at least a new mythos. I mean, zombie wise, because in this movie, the zombies actually have supernatural strength too. It's a little bit different than other zombie movies. It's almost like they have vampiric strength or something. Like she's got the strength of like a couple grown men in this movie.
That is funny. Cause like, I'm like, why is she so fucking strong? Which is, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, it added to the fact that she's becoming a zombie. And also, she's so fucking, like, off her rocker. Like, one minute she's super, super calm and loving. One minute she's super horny. One minute she's super angry. Like, I'm like, wow, she's definitely, is this woman, like, in her mid to early 20s? Because the hormones are raging.
Well, the funny thing about the horny part of it was I feel like that was her brain. Like, she didn't know what her brain was telling her she needed at that point, which was flesh. But she got flesh, but in a different way, if you understand what I'm saying.
So disgusting.
I'm being serious. Like, yes. I think that she was, you know, and he was even worried about that. It's like, are you eating people? She's like, what the fuck are you talking about? But then, like, her craving, like, manifested in, like, I really, really want to kiss you a lot. And it was just because, you know, it was like, okay, your brain, you've not comprehended yet that you were craving his flesh, just not in the way that you're getting it right yeah. now, you know.
God, she got her meat by injection, so.
At the part where she's eating the car seat styrofoam.
Oh, that's how so fucking funny. Dude, she is feral as fuck in this movie. It's like, this movie was fucking, it was out of pocket.
I like the fact that it takes them a while. Like when they come back before they start, it's like they're rotting, which they should as yeah. zombies, not just like physically, but they're mentally, like they start out, they're fine. They just like, she doesn't remember like the last little bit, you know, prior to her death, which yeah. is interesting. And then like slowly her mind just, she starts forgetting more and more stuff. She's more just like, I'm really angry. I'm really hungry. I don't know. I mean, that's all my brain tells me I can do. It's like you're seeing the prelude to the zombie apocalypse when you're watching this.
Yeah. You know? And it's funny how she's like, why are you guys acting so weird? Why is everybody acting so weird?
And then the Slocums won't tell her. It's like, you were dead just like a day ago. So,
I mean, like, I feel like I can understand them to a degree. Like, there's definitely a fine line of, our child is back. What can we do to make this work? Like, I get that. I do understand that. What I don't understand is the extremes they have to go through to make sure she's not angry. Like, if you're building a mud hut in our attic, that's a no.
Yeah.
You're not doing that. I'm sorry. I want you around. You're rotting. They clearly can smell her. They don't have to be as close as fucking Zach is to smell her, to know something's not right. She starts getting very, very erratic. I mean, look what happened. They let it get so bad, she ate her fucking father. I tell you what, if Nona eats her dad, she's going to implode from the inside.
And they did hint, I think, in the movie, there's a line, I think one of them says that they've got candles burning or something like that to cover up the smell, basically.
Yeah, I mean come on now. Like, I would want a second chance with my child as well. But just like the dad said, tell her everything you wish you could say when she was alive. Do that, and you got to be done with it. No one wants to kill her a second time, but she cannot go on like this.
And that's the real point of the movie, is it's like, I mean, it's taken to an extreme, but it's like when you can't let someone go either because you broke up with them, which is kind of plays into it a little bit, because it basically Zach says that she was going to break up with him prior to getting bit.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is that just letting someone go who's died, which is, it's tough.
I get it.
At a certain point, you've got to live, I mean, or you don't. I mean, that's your two options.
All have gone through something in our life where we wish we had a second chance, but I think we could all safely say we wouldn't take it to this extreme.
No, but I mean, that's the point of the comedy of it. It's to, like, tweeze it out to the end and see how nuts it can get.
Oh, my God. Such a good movie, though. Seriously. They did really good. I really like how it just seems like she was a girl with multiple personalities, because at the end of the movie, I was like, she just wanted to make sure her man wasn't seeing another woman. Like, I don't know what the big deal was.
That one scene where she confronts him right when they come out of there, and she's like, who's this bitch? And yeah. It's like, you know,
Zachary.
And it's like, and she's like, what, is there another Beth? You know, because it's like, you know, she's like, is this Beth? I thought you said, it's like, what, or is there another Beth now? Like, who are you talking about?
Oh, my God. I told Noah straight up. I was like, she sounds like me. She sounds like me if I had been put in that situation. Like, what do you mean another Raina? I am the Raina. What the fuck? Like, there's another Raina?
I was going to ask you this. What do you think that symbolizes, that the zombies want to climb to the topest part of the house and build like another grave, like higher up? Like, there's something weird about that. I don't know what it's representing.
I don't know what the going up would be, because you would think that they would do it to the basement.
Yeah, and it's like they're climbing upward. It's almost like they're trying to get into the afterlife, like, or something. Like, there's something there about that. Like, they're wanting to ascend, you know, but yeah, they can't.
I have no idea. I mean
the movie doesn't give you any hints toward the resolution of that. It's just when I watched it, I'm like, there's something to that, but I want to know what, why that's the case.
Another thing I could think of is that they were underground. They clearly had to climb, dig their way out to get out of the grave, and that's not any fun. So maybe they're like, well, instead of being up, I'll be up, below, I'll be up high. But then they still have the mud, and I don't know if the mud is to keep it cool or keep it dark. I don't know what that symbolizes.
Yeah, and for a second, when I didn't see that for some reason when I was watching it, and I didn't remember looking at my phone, so I don't know what happened. It maybe skipped over it because I had to watch it in multiple like little breaks or whatever.
Yeah.
I saw it the first time whenever they, because I was like, there's a part in this fucking movie where she's building a bunch of mud in that attic, but I totally missed it the second time for whatever reason. So I'm glad you mentioned it because I thought I was going insane. I'm like, this movie had a mud scene. Like, what am I missing here?
It's very brief. He doesn't see it until her eyes start glowing, obviously. We see it, and that's when we see it. But it's very, very brief that they discuss it. But prior to that, she's basically putting mud in different areas of the house, like in plants. And her father's like, she's building something.
That's right. Yeah.
He's like, she's building something. It's amazing. And it's like, this isn't normal.
It's funny, too, because remember when we was talking about Night of the Living Dead, Harry Cooper's, like, big thing, at least in the remake, was to go up into the attic because the zombies wouldn't there. And in this apocalypse, no, you're going to die, son. The basement is where you want to be at.
They want to build their hub in the fucking attic, so.
I just think it's interesting to me. It's, I don't know, in my head canon, it's like they're trying to build up because like they know that they're dead somehow and that they should be, you know, in heaven terms going up instead of down, or at least they hope they can.
Yeah.
And their way of doing that is to like go to the highest part of the house and like stay there, you know, kind of weird.
It's weird.
Trivia on this movie, Nick Offerman can be heard narrating the documentary on Machu Picchu in the beginning of the film.
Oh, shit.
One of the several ties to Aubrey Plaza's role in the series Parks and Rec. Near the end, Beth is talking on the phone with Andy. This is an obvious reference to a role in Parks and Rec in which her husband, played by Chris Pratt, is called Andy. So when she's on the phone and she's like, I'm talking to Andy, that was kind of their nod to, you know, the fact that she dated Andy on the show.
That's hella funny.
The photograph of Beth and Zach that Zach grabs near the end of the film was clearly taken from the final scene of Parks and Rec in the season 4, episode 6, End of the World, which is appropriate, End of the World episode. The mailman played by Jim O'Hare appears on Parks and Rec with Aubrey Plaza. He plays, Jerry is his name on the show, and everybody hates him.
Oh my God.
It's funny. Aubrey Plaza later appears in Matthew Gray Gubler's television series Criminal Minds. Plaza appears as Cat Adams in 4 episodes of the crime drama with Gubler. So there you go. A little bit of connection between the two of them. Despite their characters appearing to being in college, Beth repeatedly feels the need to study for tests, and Zach points it out that they're on summer break.
Yeah.
Both of them were, Aubrey and Dane were 30 and 28 respectively when the film was released.
That's so funny.
I'll give them credit. They both look young, so it kind of works. I mean, I can imagine them being in their 20s, you know?
Yeah. Well, poor little Daney, he doesn't age. Because I was on his Instagram recently, and I think he's almost 40.
And he still looks like he's like late 20s or something. He looks like
he's a child for sure.
It's funny because whenever I was watching My Boyfriend's Back, everybody in that movie looks like that they're in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're supposed to be in high school.
Oh, that's hella
going
funny.
To prom.
Hello, fellow kids.
Well, what's even worse is that... Philip Seymour Hoffman, I totally forgot he was in that, is one of the goons in the movie. And I don't know if Philip Seymour Hoffman ever had a hairline that was like anywhere near normal, but it's way to the top of his head even in that movie. So he looks like he's 40 playing a teenager in that movie. No. It's hilarious. But anyways, this movie, I would give this a 4. I like this movie a lot for what it does.
Yeah, this is. I'm going to agree with you on that. It's going to be a 4 for me, because, I mean, excellent movie, hilarious. I think I was entertained the entire time, but we just got done reviewing Death Becomes Her. And that one was, what, a 4.5 for me? So yeah. It wasn't going to go higher than that, although it's damn close, and I think 4 is fair.
I think it's fair. I mean, I really enjoy the movie, and I think, like I said, it's criminal to me that more people don't know it. Now, I will argue that Cemetery Man is, if it stays niche and it's only like a cult film, that's probably fine given what we've discussed about it. I think this movie should be more, get more play than it does. Cause I mean, it's got a lot going for it. And it's just, it really went under the radar for a lot of people. I don't know why, but it did.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say before we close this one out?
I am a little sad that it got the box office that it did.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, and they put a lot in. I mean, everybody in this movie like played their parts well, and like they got some respectable people in it. And I'm sure that if it had done well, they might have like actually, maybe not like a sequel or anything, because you can't really do that, but they might have went on to like do something else, like for A24, another horror movie of some kind that had elements. But you know, I mean, with that kind of result, they're like, okay, we tried, moving on, going on with their lives, you know, and it kind of came and went.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a rewatch for me, which may or may not mean anything to any of the listeners, depending on how they view it. But it's a rewatch for me. It's definitely comedy gold. And I really think that besides, I know that the character that played Zach Dane, he's a good actor, like no doubt about it. But Aubrey Plaza really fucking held this film. She carried film, just like she carried that fucking oven.
stove.
Do we have anything about the practical effects of that?
No, I mean, I didn't see any kind of information about the behind the scenes on that or anything.
That shit was fucking hilarious. Because, like, you know, it was lighter than you. I mean, it's probably heavy still. She's a little girl, you know?
The way she waddles, though, when she's carrying it is hilarious in the movie. It's like side to side, and it's like, and she's having to stay in character as a zombie, which, until you see it, you can't. I mean, it sounds goofy, but she really sells it because she's sitting there and she's just like, but she's like still waddling with this huge thing on her back.
Yeah, you got to remember, I don't know if it was like if they had a different one for what she was laying on when she fell backwards, but she looks like a turtle essentially with this oversized shell. Okay, she falls backwards. It's so heavy, it picks her up because, again, she is a tiny girl. And she is on her back on this fucking stove, legs in the air, flailing like crazy. She has no use of her arms because they're also chained up. And really only when anyone's only paying attention is her crotch and her panties, probably, you know? But even then, I'm like, okay, so clearly this thing was sturdy enough to hold her, unless that was a different box, and then what she was hiking in was a completely different box.
I'm sure that's what they did. Whenever she was laying on it, it was probably like something that was actually a stove, and then like later, whenever she had to carry it, it was like. But the thing is that even if it was painted to look like that, it glinted like it was metal in the sun. I mean, they sold it. I mean, that's going back to the visuals of it, but they really sell the fact that she's little tiny thing packing this huge stove all over the place.
Yeah. And then going on an actual fucking hike with it, that shit was hilarious. I was like, they're really going to go on a hike, which was the safest thing for him because she was losing it more.
Which, that's another point that goes into the story that I find that builds on the mythos of the zombies in this movie, which I really like, is that that's the one way to keep her calm, because she loved to hike when she was alive, and that's what she remembers liking to do. So when he suggests that, she always says yes.
Yeah.
Which is it's an interesting point. It's like her brain might be breaking down, decaying, whatever's going, you know, on, but she just remembers, I like to hike.
Yeah. You know? I mean, he knows the things, and so do her parents. They know the things that will kind of keep her at bay, so I get that. Thankfully, he was reasonable.
And it says something, too, for him in a sad way, that if she was breaking up with him to go with somebody else, which is what he thought she was doing prior to getting bit by the snake, she didn't remember that other guy at all.
She
came back. She only remembered Zach. So that's both heartbreaking and I don't know. There's something in, you know, about him that, I mean, that should, like, you know, he should, like, look with pride the fact that she, when she came back, he was the only one that she remembered, like, yeah, dating.
Well, and here's the thing, too. The one thing I did not like, the only thing I did not like about this film is that they really, like, they just show her go on a hike for, like, what, 30 seconds?
It's not even 30 seconds. I agree with you. If they would have shown a little bit more, yeah, about, like, just in the intro, is where you're speaking about, whenever they're setting it up, you see, like, just brief images of her, like, outside, sweat, and then bam, it's like her funeral. If they would have shown just, like, as the credits are rolling, just more of her hike, and then all of a sudden she sits down somewhere, and then you see the snake, and yeah, then it cuts, that would have been way more effective.
Yeah, you only really needed, like, 30 more seconds, maybe a minute more tops. It really didn't take that much, but it was just like, I don't know, you kind of had to find out by bits and pieces what happened, you know, and I didn't like that at all.
That's the only, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's what I was thinking too, that beginning part, if they would have just did a little bit more with that and set up the threat of the snake and then cut to her being dead, then it's like, okay, your brain fills in the gap. It's like, she got bit, she died. Okay, now that's where we're at, you know?
Yeah, because it's weird too, because they talk about her hiking by herself a lot, and she was like, I didn't do that. Like, she yeah, really wanted to go on a hike with him. He never wanted to hike with her. Obviously, he's feeling guilty. But, like, she doesn't even, like, she's like, I wouldn't have done that. But she did, you know?
Yeah, she did do that. So, which is, I mean, what does that say? I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I mean, other than that, I mean, once you get past that point and the movie actually starts up in earnest, then it, you know, it they do a good job with it. It's just they if they'd fixed that one little thing, it'd been perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all, right, that's
folks,
all I have.
We're moving into territory next time that Urena is not going to like.
Nope.
We're moving back to, is it Fast Zombies?
Ugh, I think it's Fast Zombies.
Because we're doing Dawn, and they're not fast in the original Dawn, but they are fast in the remake. And they are fast in 28 Days Later. Ugh. And then we got, what is it, World War Z.
Ugh,
so, yeah.
God. I'm going to have a heart attack before we make it through before we get to April.
So hopefully my co-host will survive this coming month. And if not, maybe she won't come back from the dead and try to bite anybody. That's all I'm going to say. So with that, folks, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.